Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you downloaded it from. Thanks very much for downloading it. We have a great guest for you today. I know that because I got to write the foreword to a book that he has written, Fighting for My Life. It's Dr. Marwan Sabbah, who is the director, the medical director of the Cleveland Clinic Uruvo Center for Brain Health, and a specialist in dementia, which this book is about. But before we get there, I should tell you this is 948B of the podcast, 948B, 947, wonderful guest, Bottle of Wise, Catherine Eban. You'll want to download that too. And of course, the A segments are always the medical news of the week and what it means to you. Dr. Sabbah, thanks very much for coming on. And how did you get the idea to write the book, Fighting for My Life, How to Thrive in the Shadow of Alzheimer's?
Thank you for having me, Dr. Roizen. It's an honor and a pleasure to be on your show. The story is kind of a bittersweet story. The co-author, Jamie Tyrone, turns out to be a normal middle-aged woman. She found out she is at a high statistical risk for developing Alzheimer's disease. She was getting tested for something else. She had she got her APOE gene testing. She had two copies of the four, which means her lifetime risk was 91%. So the story, the book comes about by her writing her autobiography, essentially. But my half of the book is really about, should somebody get tested? Is that a good idea? What are the consequences of that information? What should you do with that information? How should you alter your life? What does the genetic risk mean in terms of your future risk of developing it? And so I write kind of the medical half of the book to kind of talk about the science and the medicine of genetics and genetic disclosure and having this genetic information, and can we alter our life if we know we have this information? And this is becoming consequential, Dr. Roizen, because, you know, people are spitting in a tube, sending it to Boston, getting the results from 23andMe, and they're getting their genetic disclosure thousands of times a day, not understanding that they're getting tested essentially surreptitiously for Alzheimer's risk. And so this book is very timely.
And it is a timely book. It's an incredibly well-written book, and it really gives you the story of what to do to prevent dementia. And let's go back and say, there's a big difference between preventing, if you will, cognitive dysfunction or memory dysfunction or Alzheimer's, and treating it. So talk to a little bit about the difference and why is prevention possible and treatment not, or is that wrong?
The fact is that we know the changes in the brain that lead to Alzheimer's dementia, which is a progressive degenerative decline associated with loss of functional ability, more often in the elderly, the changes occur in the brain up to 20 years before the first day of forgetfulness. In essence, by the time they walk into my office or the Cleveland Clinic to see me, they've already had changes in their brain for up to two decades. So the treatments right now are very primitive. I would say we call them symptomatic treatments. They improve the symptoms for a matter of time, but they don't slow or alter the outcome or the trajectory, ultimately. So ultimately, people still progress into the full dementia and ultimately perish from their Alzheimer's dementia. A lot of people in the field, and myself included, starting to think that maybe treating symptomatic dementia, even with the medications that are approved, is a little bit too late. And so we need to approach it with a robust prevention strategy. You've seen the World Health Organization say that up to a third of all dementias could be preventable with aggressive lifestyle interventions. I hope that's true. We do know that lifestyle interventions do alter risk of cognitive decline, lower the risk of cognitive decline, and there are things that people can do starting right away to reduce the risk. So prevention is really where the major focus, the shift of focus has been. The treatments not only are primitive, but you keep hearing about all these studies that keep failing over and over and over again. So we have a lot to do, both in the prevention space and the treatment space.
So this is the book, which is Fighting for My Life, is about how to prevent it in both the patient and the drama of the genetic tests that were unexpected for her to even get them, as well as the strategies for prevention. So let's talk about some of those strategies for prevention. And I must tell you, it's a beautifully written book that interdigitates, if that's a correct phrase, both the patient and the prevention therapies. Some of the things that help are physical activity and diet and some mental exercises. Can you go into a little bit on those and what you would tell the readers to do if you could go one-on-one with them?
Right. So this is the conversations that I'm having more often than I used to, for sure. And the fundamental question, Dr. Roizen, that we are facing as medical providers is, can we offset genetic risk with lifestyle interventions? And this is not just unique to Alzheimer's. Of course, I'm sure when you have other guests on, you know, we're trying to alter multiple kinds of risks, genetic risks with lifestyle interventions. So the answer is we hope so. But we do know, according to the National Academy of Science, Medicine, and Engineering, and more recently, about a month ago, the World Health Organization, that certain interventions have sufficient evidence to recommend them. That means that the body of science and medical research has risen to the point where, licensing bodies can recommend these. And there are three in particular. We know that physical exercise has sufficient evidence to reduce the risk of cognitive decline and dementia. We know that cognitive stimulation, meaning brain games, it clearly has the ability to reduce cognitive decline. And third was blood pressure management. A lot of speculation around supplements and diet. There's clearly a lot of evidence and discussions around diet. But I think at this point, we're not quite ready to coalesce around single recommendations around dietary interventions. But there is now studies suggesting that aggressive lifestyle interventions, a couple of years ago, the Finger study out of Scandinavia, and now the U.S. version of the Finger study, the Pointer study, is a really remarkable study, a landmark study. And to this audience, the Finger study was done in Sweden and Finland. Basically, people 68 to 72, normal elderly, but at risk for cognitive decline, were randomized either aggressive treatment, which was aggressive medical treatment, medical management, optimizing all their health conditions, physical exercise, cognitive stimulation, versus not the sham treatment, which was none of those. And they showed after 2 years that the people who got aggressive treatment, physical exercise, cog stem, aggressive medical management, did clearly better over serial cognitive tests, clearly diverged after 6 months and stayed diverged in a positive way, compared to people who got the sham treatment. So what I'm saying to this audience is that we know objectively, prospectively, randomized strategies that these interventions work. And it's not just a feel-good recommendation. There's now a large body of scientific evidence to support it. And it was published in The Lancet, so it's a very legitimate study.
And now the exercise is, and there was recent data on, as well as blood pressure, LDL control. But let's go and talk about the physical activity. So, and blood pressure control, and then the cognitive stimulation, and what specifics have to be.
So that's a good question. Physical exercise has been looked at a bit, and we think that it's mostly aerobic exercise that is the thing that people need to do. I hate running, Mike. I'm a 53-year-old man, but I've taken up running because neuroscientists like to run, and I was noticing that all the neuroscientists are runners, And the reason is that running is the quickest way to increase expression of a neurochemical called BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And that is the healing neurotrophic factor you need to improve the brain cells, essentially. So physical exercise, particularly running, has been shown to be beneficial in BDNF expression. You know, can you elevate your BDNF with other things? We think so. But clearly the way the evidence is, physical aerobic exercise is the preferable strategy aerobic over isometric exercise.
And aerobic is exercise that raises your heart rate to greater than 80% of your age-adjusted max. Your age-adjusted max is 220 minus your calendar age. I should remind people we're talking with Dr. Marwan Sabbagh, S-A-B-B-A-G-H, author of Fighting for My Life, which is this fascinating and wonderful book about the prevention, or what to do if you have an... It starts, actually, what to do when the patient and co-author has a genetic test that shows she's at risk for 91% risk, as it turns out, because she's got two of the genes, or she's homozygous for the E4 gene that she got accidentally. Jamie, who is that co-author, Jamie Tyrone, is the one who initiated this book and got Dr. Sabbagh to share his great knowledge with us. So we've just been through the finger and pointer studies, talking about one, aerobic exercise. They also have control of other medical conditions, including their high blood pressure. And where did they control that to? Do you know?
I don't know the specific parameters. There's a study that was published over 10 years ago called the Cyst Your Study, which was by Dr. Foret, and basically showing that aggressive blood pressure management reduced risk of developing Alzheimer's. And there's a whole bunch of studies. Ingmar Skoog did a lot of this work out of Sweden as well. But there, we do know, you know, there's been discussions on whether it's an ACE inhibitor, ARB, calcium channel blocker, a beta blocker, and because there's some speculations on which one would be best for the brain. I think the discussion is around calcium channel blockers, but I think fundamentally any blood pressure management that normalizes your blood pressure is going to be beneficial, and there's a lot of evidence to suggest that is the case.
And the cognitive games, is there a specific brain game or intellectual game? Is I read that speed of processing games and other games that require both, if you will, multiple skills of your brain help. Is there any better data than that? And you go into this extensively in the book, so I want to tell people the book has the answers to every question I'm asking. The book is Fighting for My Life. It is in addition to Marwan Sabbagh, Tyrone, T-Y-R-O-N-E, is the author. But I think the key point on this is that every question I ask you, if you want have anything about the drama of Alzheimer's disease, whether you should get tested or not, and the thoughts about what you're going to do if you do get tested and the results. This is really a substantial work and fun to read, almost scary to read. I think I was reading it, I was shaking at times. It is meaningful to read. But let's get one more question in about Fighting for My Life, How to Thrive in the Shadow of Alzheimer's, published by Thomas Nelson. Dr. Sabbagh, S-A-B-B-A-G-H, I should say, for people looking it up on Amazon. Dr. Sabbagh, tell us, is there specific cognitive, are there data good enough to say there's a specific cognitive set of games or games that work.
Yeah, so people, like a lot of other things, take that CogStim as a panacea, and it's not necessarily true. What we do know is that whatever you do cognitively, your brain will pick up, but it only pick up in that domain. So if you do frontal executive attention-based activities, which are the things you were talking about, so, you know, you were talking about processing speed. So processing speed is a good one example of attention concentration is another example of it. Whatever, if you happen to be doing games in those specific domains, your brain function will improve in those domains. It will not improve across the board. It's not like suddenly if I'm doing an attention concentration task, my memory gets better. Just that my attention concentration abilities get better progressively as I do more of those games. So what we do know is that the brain games help. They do improve cognitive function. It's domain specific to whatever you're doing. But the questions are many. One, does it stick? Do you stay well permanently? The answer is we're not clear. There is clear evidence. There's some evidence. There's decay. If you stop doing it after a while, you lose that ability that you learned. So probably the idea is that you want to start with cognitive stimulation and you want to stay with it. But there's a lot of also fogginess or vagueness with the science. So if I do 3 hours of Sudoku versus 1 hour of Sudoku, am I three times more protected? The answer is we're not sure that that is the case. We just know that people who do Sudoku are better off, or I should say CogStim are better off than don't. If I do the New York Times crossword puzzle as opposed to the, you know, the Sun City, Arizona crossword puzzle because of intensity effect, am I more protected? We don't know the answer to that either. We just know that people who do these things tend to be more protected. And you also know that there's the question always is it a epiphenomenon of other things? Because people who do cognitive stimulatory activities are also the people that exercise and eat right and watch their weight and do blood pressure management, et cetera. So the question always is it not have anything to do with cognitive stimulation? It's just that these are healthier people to begin with. But we do think that the evidence suggests that focused CogStim will help in those specific domains. So if you're getting your processing speed, you know, you're clicking the game controller quicker and you're able to hit the targets or remember things quicker, then that area will continue to improve as long as you do it.
I want to thank you, Marwan Sabah, Fighting for My Life from Nelson Books with Tyrone, T-Y-R-O-N-E, and Sabah, S-A-B-B-A-G-H, Fighting for My Life, a great book. This is You, the Owner's Manual. It is number 948B, 948B of You, the Owner's Manual podcast. This is Come Back Next Week. I want to thank Randall for great engineering and Marwan for writing a sensational book. We'll be back next week.